This is the Unstoppable Authors Podcast with worldbuilding warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable. Hello and welcome to episode 154 of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Line, and today I have an interview with the incomparable Helen Scheurer, all about writing in series. Before we get into the interview, here's my personal update. So I'm rounding up my review team at the moment and getting my ARC ready to send out to them. I actually also ran a workshop this week showing other authors how to go through that process, which was really fun and really highlighted some things that I need to clarify for myself as well. So that was a really valuable experience, and I will be sure to do more things like that in the future and let people know so that they can attend. I've been working on Felix. So far I've been looking through what I already have written, looking through my notes, and beginning to think about what needs to happen in the rest of the book. So I've talked about this on my social media, on Instagram this week, and I did mention it a bit last week as well in the podcast. But basically, because I've taken a big break from writing this book, I need a bit of clarity, you know, to get back into it before I start plowing ahead and writing. I just need to reorient myself. I'm always saying that each project has different needs, and you can have a different process for every single book you ever write. It may never be the same twice. Some people do settle into a really solid routine that they stick with and a process they stick with for many, many books. But for some of us, it changes. And this is one of those occasions where my process has had to change. Because this book is using, you know, kind of leaning on the mystery and thriller genres a bit more, I did feel the need to do a bit of plotting with this book to figure out, I have a missing artifact that my PI is looking for, and I needed to know where it had been so that I could, you know, send him off on his investigation to find it. But I am thinking now as well that in order to get to the end of the book quite quickly, I want to kind of outline or skinny draft what remains so that I have a bit more of a map. And this is something I haven't done before, not in this way anyway. I have plotted in the past, but this is a little bit different because I'm already halfway through the book. But yeah, it's an interesting process, and it's I think it's important to remain open-minded and not be too entrenched about what kind of writer you are, because it is actually a spectrum and we move around on it. Between being a plotter and a discovery writer, and that's perfectly okay. So I just wanted to put that out there and advocate for, you know, anyone who feels like they want to change their process with their current or their next book. I'm also sort of thinking ahead to what I might want to write next and what I want to be doing with the last quarter of this year, which I can't believe we're nearly there already, and even projecting into next year, which shouldn't really surprise anyone given my number one Clifton strength. It's also been a sad week here in the UK in particular, but all around the world. Queen Elizabeth passed away on Thursday. Oh, I'm getting choked up. I'm actually a Republican. I'm not a royalist, and for those of you who may be confused by the use of that term, in this part of the world, a Republican is someone who would like to see the dissolution of the monarchy and moving to a full democracy. But I have an affection for the royal family as well, and I do appreciate the important role that Queen Elizabeth has played historically, you know, for 70 years. And I have a great deal of empathy for the family, and so it's been a very challenging few days. This morning we watched the the proclamation of King Charles III. It's a ceremony that's never been televised before, seeing as the last time it happened was before every household even had a TV. So, it was interesting to kind of see that sort of glimpse into history, really, this very archaic tradition that's existed for, 1,000 years. Absolutely fascinating. This is not to be confused with the coronation, which has a great deal more pomp and ceremony and, big costumes and all of that stuff. This is a more somber and simple ceremony. The coronation probably won't happen until next spring or summer, based on what happened with Queen Elizabeth. But we made our kids watch the ceremony this morning. I think it's an important historical event for them to remember, so they may have been bored out of their minds, but hopefully they'll appreciate it when they grow up. The whole thing has reminded me that we're all part of what will become history, no matter how small and simple our personal impact on the world is. Obviously, very few people in the world throughout time will ever have the status and impact of Queen Elizabeth, but we each have our own role to play. Angeline mentioned last week when talking about her big why that she wanted to leave a legacy for her children, and that's something that I feel too, but more so I want to leave something of myself in the world after I'm gone and to touch people's lives, if only in a very small way. It means so much when a reader reaches out to me and tells me that my book had an impact on them. That's the reason I do this. And seeing this huge, momentous historical event unfolding, being here for it, just really is really humbling. It gives me a new perspective on life, I suppose. So our question of the week last week was, what is your big why? Over in our Facebook group, Edwin said, I have stories I want to tell with the hope others will enjoy them too. Really, for me, writing happens in the brain, leaving me with the choice to craft my own stories or dance all over the manuscripts of other writers. Heather said, she actually shared an image that she related to, that said, here's to the kids that use fictional characters as a way of coping. Here's to the kids that stay up late crying to their favourite characters. Here's to the kids that imagine their favourite character by their side when they're experiencing bad anxiety in public. Here's to the kids that need works of fiction to keep on surviving. Adding a shout out to the adults who cope in this way too. Life doesn't become easy just because you've grown up. And Tom said, immortality, both a goal and a why. On our Instagram, Tripp said, mostly because I have to. If I don't write this story in my head, who will? And Melinda said, I have stories that need to be told. I want to entertain and inspire readers of all ages. So thank you everyone for your comments. This week, I want to know, what is your favourite all-time book series? It could be one that you've written, but it could also be one by another wonderful author. So come along onto our Instagram or our Facebook group and share your answer. We have no new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of our current patrons. We appreciate the support so much. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the chance to join in with our monthly sessions of Sprints and Giggles, an evening where we do writing sprints, answer questions, and have a laugh. Our next session is coming up on the 21st of September. If you'd like to join in and also support the show, you can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. It would be really great if you could support the show in another way by sharing this episode on social media. Grab a screenshot, share it directly from your podcast platform, or even take a selfie as you listen to it. Just remember to tag us so that we can share it too. It means so much, honestly, to hear from our listeners and to know that you enjoy the show. So do please reach out to us on social media. And now on to the interview with Helen Scheurer. With me today is Helen Scheurer. She's the YA fantasy author of the best-selling trilogy, The Oromir Chronicles. The series has been highly praised for its strong, flawed female characters and its action-packed plots. It has often been likened to Sarah J. Maas' Throne of Glass series and the epic girl power film, Wonder Woman. Helen's love of writing and books led her to pursue a Bachelor of Creative Writing, majoring at the University of Wollongong, and a Master's of Publishing at the University of Sydney. Now a full-time author, Helen lives amidst the mountains in New Zealand and is constantly dreaming up new stories. Welcome to the podcast, Helen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
So why don't you get us started by telling me a bit about your writing journey so far?
Yeah, sure. So I've always loved books and writing, like ever since I was a little kid. I think I was writing stories from about age 7 onwards. And I suppose I wrote all throughout school, very, very terrible novels, rip-offs of Pirates of the Caribbean and Lord of the Rings and like everything in between. But all of them had very much like a girl power slant to them. I guess it took, other works and put like a female at the centre of everything. So I was always really interested in that. And I always wanted to be a published author. And I suppose by the time, high school was ending and everybody was thinking about going to uni, the only thing I could sort of stomach the idea of studying for 3 more years was creative writing. So against several people saying, what sort of job are you going to get with a creative writing degree? I did it, and I didn't really look back from that. And from there, I've been writing constantly throughout all that time. And it wasn't until 2017 that I published my first book, Heart of Mist, which is the first book in the Oromia Chronicles that you mentioned. And I haven't really looked back since then. I guess fun fact is that after Heart of Mist came out in 2017, the following year I went full-time as an indie author and have been writing full-time ever since. And now that I've got a couple of fantasy series under my belt, I've also got a non-fiction book for authors coming out on the 11th of August. That's called How to Write a Successful Series. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently writing my 10th book, which feels mad.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I bet it must be very satisfying to be able to say to those people, what are you going to do with a creative writing degree? This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, exactly. It was an interesting one. Like, I've spoken about this before with people, just that, it was a fantastic degree in that you did a lot of reading, you had to work to deadlines, you were taught how to deal with constructive criticism and how to give constructive criticism. Mm. But it didn't really touch on genre fiction, and it certainly didn't touch on indie publishing. Mm. So a lot of that sort of side of my career has been self-taught, and, like all of us, like, you entrench yourself in the indie community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Were you ever tempted to go trad?
Yeah, definitely. So when I was doing my creative writing degree, that very much sort of guides you in the direction of trad, as did the Masters of Publishing, which was a fantastic degree, but again, didn't touch on indie publishing. So you kind of raised with this idea that trad is the legitimate way. Mm. And I actually had a book signed with a small press before Heart of Mist came out. But it was a literary fiction book, because that's sort of what you'd been taught to write. And if you wanted to be a serious writer, you had to write literary fiction. That experience was an interesting one. It went on for a couple of years, and it sort of highlighted all the things that are wrong with traditional publishing, just in its inefficiency, in its like incredibly slow production. Mm. And in the end, luckily, it was one of those instances where it was, one of those blessings in disguise. The rights got reverted back to me before that book came out, because that would have been the completely wrong decision for me in the end. I don't think I could have made a career writing literary fiction, and I don't think I would have wanted to. I sort of after that fell back in love with fantasy and genre fiction. It was a good thing that happened, but I definitely considered it for a while. And also when I was writing Heart of Mist, I had interest because I was blogging about a lot of this stuff at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had someone from one of the big five contact me having interest in Heart of Mist and asking if they could put it to their editor, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of thought, I considered it. I asked how long all this would take, and it was going to take something like 8 weeks just to have it read. And, you know, at the end of that, they could have just said, oh, no, thanks. And then I would have been eight weeks behind my production schedule, because at that time I had pretty much decided I wanted to go indie just based on my previous experiences, based on what I was seeing in the industry. You know, having done a master's of publishing, I knew a lot of people working with some of the bigger publishers. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of had the realization, like, if you're not going to be that year's lead title, the marketing budget and all of that stuff that they're going to put into it isn't going to be what I want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm still going to be doing the brunt of the marketing work, even with a trad publisher. So, yeah, long story short, I decided that indie was the best option for me.
Mm-hmm. And lucky for us and all of your readers, really.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, you've managed to put out so many books and, you know, create, you know, generate a following and everything, and that may not have been possible going the traditional route just because of the roadblocks.
Yeah, exactly. And I really think, like, you know, nobody is going to work as hard for your book as you are, so you may as well capitalize on, you know, the higher royalty rates and all of that stuff as an indie.
Absolutely.
if that's you know, your goal, of course.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so you mentioned your nonfiction book that's coming out very soon. It will be out, mm-hmm, when this episode airs.
Yeah.
So what prompted you to write a book on writing series?
it's an interesting one, because I think at the time I was considering writing a nonfiction just because, you know, it's been nearly five years since that first book came out, and I've learned a lot of lessons. A lot of them I learned the hard way. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, in talking to other writers, I get a lot of joy from sort of like sharing those experiences. But originally, when I was considering the nonfiction, it was a much broader topic. It was something like, you know, strategies for long-term success. And I had one of my author friends read a very early draft of it. And she sort of said to me, you know, this is all about writing in a series. And I was like, no, I didn't know that. And it turned out that all of my sort of, you know, bits of advice and all my experiences were sort of linked to the fact that I'd written series. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just knowing that after it had been pointed out to me, and then sort of realizing once I'd been told that, I realized I did have this really deep fascination with writing a series, with the form, with the structure, and how doing that set me up for success. So yeah, just sort of went from there. And once I had that angle and I knew I was, you know, focusing on writing a series, then the book sort of just came. It was really good.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so what are the advantages of writing in a series?
So I think there's quite a lot, so I'll keep it to three. Mm-hmm. I think the first one, and this I want to preface it by saying, like, I'm a fantasy author, but and I think, you know, because I'm referencing a lot of my experiences, it comes off as, you know, fantasy this, fantasy that. But I really think that a lot of what I say can just be applied to any genre. Mm-hmm. But so the first point, like, one of the advantages is utilizing the groundwork. So every time you write a book, you are world building. And that can be whether you're doing romance, thriller, fantasy, sci-fi, whatever you're writing, mm-hmm, there is an element of world building.
Yep.
You're also building up your characters. You're doing the setup, right, for every single book that you write. And when you write a series, one of the things that I love about it is that the more books you write in that series, the less like work that feels,
mm-hmm,
and the less work you're having to do with the setup of each book, because you've already laid the groundwork. And I just think that, you know, when you are writing in a series, you really capitalize on that groundwork over and over again, mm-hmm, rather than having to start from scratch with every book. And, yeah, you know, if you are intending to be a full-time author or have this as your career or try to make, you know, a particular type of a particular amount of income, knowing how to streamline that process, knowing how to make each book easier really, really helps in the long term. Yeah. So I would say that, yeah, that is a really major advantage. I think writing in series also makes advertising more profitable. So you can actually make a loss on that first book if you then capture a certain amount of people to go into the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, I'd say there's a lot more sort of promotional flexibility with writing a series because you can do things like promo stack. You can do things like discount that first book every time a new book comes out, which is what one of the strategies I use when I launch in my series. And basically every launch that you do in a series breathes new life into that whole series. And mm-hmm. because somebody might see the promotion you're doing for book four, really like the cover, really like the sound of it, realize it's in a series, and then they go back to book one and read yeah. two, three, four. So yeah, those are just a couple. I mean, I could probably sit here all day, but those are a couple.
Yeah, absolutely. I always liken the world building thing to, it's like having a sandbox. And once you've got the sandbox, it's so much fun to play in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it can be, it's fun to return to those characters, that world. I think it also helps eliminate some of the decision fatigue we feel as indie authors. Mm-hmm. You know, having to come up with new every book, whereas, you know, there is a sense of comfort. And that's why people read and watch series as well. They like returning to that world that they've become familiar with. So benefits everybody, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I write in connected series. Mm. All of my series are set in the same world. And the book I'm currently working on has a section where one of the characters goes to the city that my first series was set in. And awesome. Every time I like have to read through a section of that, I just grin from ear to ear because it's like coming home. It's so familiar. Yeah. And like, I just can't wait to play with those characters again and write something else in that city. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And that's super clever to do that because you are, and what you're doing is you're rewarding the readers who've been with you from the beginning, and they get that same like grin, they get that same, you know, thrill. Oh, I remember these guys. Oh, I'm so glad we're back here, sort of thing. So
yeah
strategy. Things like that, I think, are brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So are there any disadvantages?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's disadvantages and advantages to pretty much everything in this industry. I think probably one of them is that, you know, there might be a perceived higher barrier to entry for readers. So, you know, that feeling where you do come across book four in a series, you like the look of it, and then you go, oh God, I've got to read four books to get that experience, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I had it when I came across the Outlander series, which is now 9 books. And not only is it 9 books, they're 9 books that are, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Yeah.
So I think there might be that perceived barrier to entry at first. You know, it's harder to get someone to commit to read like 9 books as it is one. However, once you have hooked them, then you've got them for 9 books, and it's much easier then to sell someone a sequel than it is a brand new book, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that's a perceived disadvantage. Another one is that maybe your genre isn't particularly suited to it, but I think that there are potential workarounds for things like that. Like, you know, some people would say thrillers or romance, not so much, but you can do things like what you've said, which is standalones within a series, so interconnected standalones.
Mm-hmm.
And romance does this really, really well, and I'm in awe of the authors who do it, where they, you know, the first book introduces a family but focuses on one romance within that family, like the brother or whatever, and then the next book focuses on his brother's romance, and then it goes mm-hmm. on. And even though each book is self-contained and has its own story and it has its own romance arc that has a happily ever after and all that at the end, it's just a really clever way of still giving readers that complete experience that they want in a romance novel, but then bringing that reader across throughout the whole series. So if somebody is worried about, you know, potentially their genre not being suited to writing in a series, I would definitely consider stuff like that. And I suppose, you know, lastly, I mean, again, we could explore this in a lot more detail, but I think another one is potentially when an author gets discouraged by the success of the first book in the series. But I would say that, especially now, maybe not so much like 5 years ago or so, but now it takes having a few books in your series out to determine the success of that series. So I wouldn't want people to get discouraged if the first book doesn't do as well as they thought. And, you know, as I sort of mentioned before, there's a lot more promotional flexibility. So each time you have a book out in that series, you can breathe new life back into that first one. So, yeah, that's a very sort of messy summary of some disadvantages. But I think with a lot of the disadvantages, there are ways out around them.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be really tricky. I think you kind of have to make a commitment to a series to give it a fair chance to see if it's going to take off. Mm-hmm. And then if you get 3, 4, 5 books in and it's just not performing, it can be really hard to put it down and move on to something else. And that's something I've experienced, and it's gut-wrenching.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I just want to apologize because my cat is making a lot of noise.
I can't hear anything.
If it gets picked up on the recording, just to explain to the listeners, that is what that strange noise is. Okay, so what might an author want to decide before they make that commitment and start writing a new series?
So I guess two major things, and it's not things like how many books should be in a series. It's not that sort of stuff. What I would say is they need to have a really thorough understanding of their genre and their comp titles. And this is something that I sort of got lucky with my first series. I didn't think about this stuff. I mean, I wasn't as entrenched in the indie industry as I am now. So I didn't have friends telling me to do stuff. I was just sort of, doing it on the fly. I was lucky that I wrote in a genre that was quite popular, and that just naturally from having done a lot of reading for pleasure in that genre, I sort of had a good understanding of it. But now, if I was telling myself back then, I would say have a much better understanding of the genre, have at least 10 comp titles that you can reference, preferably more, and know and have that ready before you start writing. Because it gets hard when you've written the book or you've written the series, then trying to come up with comp titles and trying to pick things that you didn't intentionally do in the series to, you know, highlight when you're marketing. So I would say that. And I would also say to have an understanding of the type of series that you're writing. So are you writing a dynamic series, which is where each book builds upon the last and you couldn't start at book 3, you've got to start at book 1? Or are you writing a static series, which is like interconnected standalones? So there might be an overarching series arc, but you could read each book by itself. And each one is sort of self-contained. You don't have to read them in order and all of that. So I would say having an understanding of those sort of pillars before you start is really, really crucial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that does sort of sound a bit like planning ahead, and not all of us are adept at that. Mm-hmm. What tips do you have for those of us who lean more towards intuitive or discovery writing processes?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one, because I myself am an outliner. And when I first wrote How to Write a Successful Series, one of the things that my beta reader said to me was that, like, not everybody is an outliner. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course, not everybody's an outliner. I have a very, like, singular focus when I'm doing things, so I sort of put my blinders on. But with that in mind, I went and I spoke to a couple of discovery writers and asked them how they work and how they approach series. So there's a whole chapter on that in the book, and I would say, firstly, for me anyway, planning is quite different to outlining. When I say planning, I'm not talking about knowing what happens in your book. I'm talking about that sort of the work that comes before that, which is reading in the genre and all of that, because I really don't think you can write, say, an epic fantasy series without having read a couple of epic fantasy series.
Because
people do get a bit confused if I'm, and I sometimes people use them interchangeably, like planning and outlining, mm-hmm. and to me they're quite separate things. So I would say that. But then, yeah, in terms of tips for people who lean towards discovery writing, I would find some other authors and who work in that same way and see how they're doing it. I don't want to sit here and go, this is how you do it as a discovery writer, when I'm not a discovery writer. But in the book, I interview two authors and they tell me some of their like sort of tips and tricks for how to do it. And one of the ones that I found really interesting was, while one of them doesn't outline as such, while they're writing, it's like they keep a map of what has happened so far. So there's like, I can't remember if it's a wall of post-its or how they do it, but I imagine it as a wall of post-its. And so, you know, every time they've written a chapter, they create a post-it and go, dot, 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 this is what happened. So then when they are at that point in the next book where they need to layer in those breadcrumbs, layer in any foreshadowing or anything like that, they can look at what they did mm-hmm. on like a, you know, sort of bird's eye perspective and use that to sort of guide them. Mm-hmm. So I found that really really interesting. It's sort of like outlining, but in real time,
yeah,
as you're writing. So yeah, I mean, that's one thing, but definitely, and I think a lot of what advice stuff comes back to in this industry is finding your community and, you know, aligning yourself with like-minded people, and you can all sort of help each other.
Mm. Yeah, I have done that. In fact, I have a corkboard beside me right now that's got one of my books kind of up there, what I've written so far. And yeah, it's one of the ways I keep track, and it's, you know, I keep like a, you know, a series Bible, and I will add details to it as I write. So yeah, I very much do that.
I'm a big fan of series Bibles. There's a big meaty chapter on series Bibles in how to write a successful series, because I didn't use one for my first series and I did for my second, and God, that helped so much. It saved so many headaches. And I also have sort of like a loose idea of maybe one day, because all of my books, my fiction books, are set in the same literary universe, and there's references and, you know, Easter eggs throughout that reference each series. And one day, if I ever, you know, want to take on the challenge, I could potentially bring all the series together in like one sort of Avengers style series. But not having the series Bible for the first series is making me really hesitate about that. I think before I ventured into something that big, I would have to go back and make a series Bible or outsource that to someone to make one for me.
Yeah, I've considered putting it out to my readers, like my my mailing list, and ask if I have any fans who would like to do that. Because I think that would be, and it would be interesting to see what details they pick out as important.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're kind of talking about this now, but what else can writers do to ensure continuity or consistency across their series?
Well, without wanting to repeat myself, the first thing I'd say is the series Bible. You know, especially when you're writing books, for me anyway, that are, you know, over 100,000 words. And also, I don't release super, super quickly. So it's not like I write one book and then the next week I write the second one and I'm completely immersed in what I'm doing. You know, originally I was releasing one book a year. So by the time I'm on the second, I can't remember what happened in the first one, not to the level of detail that you need to be able to have that consistency in the continuity. So series Bible is really important for stuff like that. I would also say, if you can, have the same beta readers, have the same editor across the series, because they'll pick up on stuff that, you know, manages to slip through the cracks. It will, no matter how prepared you are. So having a team that you can rely on and a team that is invested in that series can really help pick up on those things as well.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion. So How can writers develop a character arc that travels across multiple books?
So that question kind of stumps me a little bit in terms of coming up with an actionable answer. Because I don't think I can really tell someone how their character should develop across multiple books in their series, because it depends on the type of book that they're writing and on the genre expectations as well. For instance, like a crime series would have a very different character arc development than a fantasy series. However, and I think I'm going to sound like a broken record at the end of this interview, but I think this is where the market research and the reading in the genre really, really helps enormously. Like, by doing that step first, the authors have a really clear idea of how it can be done, and arguably, most importantly, what the readers expect. Because, you know, in order to have that success, in order to maintain that readership, you need to be hitting those tropes, you need to be hitting those particular expectations and the markers throughout the series, which you'll only really get if you have that understanding in general of your genre and of your market. So I'd say, rather than me saying, oh, they have to go through this development across books 1, 2, and 3, and then books, you know, 4, 5, 6, they have to do this, I think the starting point, the best starting point, and that is applicable to everybody, is just knowing your genre and the market expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, for, you know, example, you're going to have in epic fantasy probably a hero's journey or a heroine's journey, and that would span the entire series, whereas in something like a crime thriller, it's going to be quite a static character arc. They're not going to have that kind of change and development, and it might be more subtle from book to book.
So
knowing what's expected in your genre is obviously essential. So how can authors test the market for a series before committing to it?
So this is sort of a similar answer to what we've just said. Firstly, I mean, again, depending on your goals, because if your goal is to write the book of your heart and to have an awesome time doing it and to put it out into the world, and you're not overly worried about return on investment on generating a certain type of income, then you do you. And you just go with it. But if you're talking about testing the market, I'm assuming that people are interested in terms of careers and hitting certain goals. And again, I think in order to test the market, you have to know the market. And I wouldn't advise writing a book and then putting it out and seeing how it goes. I would advise doing that research and that planning before you write the book. And so knowing, I mean, you know, there's always going to be a certain element of putting it out into the world and not knowing how it's going to do. There are books that you don't expect to do well that, you know, make $1 million, and there are fantastic books that just somehow don't find their home. But in order to give yourself the best chance for success, doing that market research prior to writing a single word, I think, is the most important thing. I guess in terms of if you wanted to put something out and see if there is the interest there, that might be a good place for prequel novellas, reader magnets, and seeing how people engage with those. And I mean, you know, depending on how you do it, you can create a reader magnet for a fraction of the cost of a book. And so you're not outlaying, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars on covers and editors to then see how it goes. You can put out something like a reader magnet and see if your newsletter likes it. I guess you could also do things like doing surveys if you've got an existing list. But yes, a lot of that stuff is you've got to have one thing in place in order to do the next thing. So I think the most sort of like fail-safe way to test the market is to do that research and see what is doing well in your genre. Read it, read the whole series. Why is it doing well? Read the reviews, you know, talk to other authors, that sort of thing. Because I would hate for someone to, you know, spend months, years writing a book, then spend hundreds, thousands of dollars on covers and editors to put it out and go, why isn't it doing well?
I have a friend who genre hopped and started a new pen name and everything, and she wrote a prequel novella and put that out. Like, you know, she's an absolute whiz at advertising and everything, and she got it out to thousands and thousands of readers, and used it as a reader magnet. So then when she had her first novel, she already had a mailing list of however many thousands of readers to launch it to. And because the magnet had been so successful, she was very confident that the novel would be as well. So yeah, I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I would sort of, I guess, chime in with that in terms of things like reader magnets, that if you are hoping to use it in order to test the market, then it should really be an accurate representation of what you are then going to try and sell. Mm. And I would advise that the reader magnet, and it can be, whether it's a short story, a novelette, a novella, a full novel, that it should be a complete experience. So, you know, in terms of a prequel story, it should still have, you know, a beginning, middle and end, and the reader at the end should feel satisfied, because what you're also doing with something like a reader magnet is sort of proving to potential readers that you can give them a complete experience, that you know how to finish a story, that you know how to have a satisfying ending. Mm. And, you know, whether that then creates a hook into the first book in the series, you can do that as well. But I would definitely advise that the reader magnet is a complete experience.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Okay, so if a series doesn't take off, or conversely, if it does better than expected, how can writers end a series early or run it for longer than they perhaps intended?
Yeah, I love this question. So I talk about this in a lot of detail in the nonfiction book, and I call them sort of exit and expansion strategies. And it's for exactly that reason. Like, if you have a series that, you know, with books one and two, oh, it does pretty average, but then book three, the whole thing takes off, but that was your final book, you're kind of like, oh, like, I've missed an opportunity here. Or alternatively, you launch books two and three of a 9-book series and it's doing terribly, and you don't then want to spend the rest of your life writing that series that's not doing well. You want to have some strategies in place that can sort of save you in those instances, I guess. Mm-hmm. And for me, again, that sort of can happen in the planning stage, but I think also discovery writers are a lot more adaptable. But for me, it would happen in the planning stage, where when I am planning my series, say I am planning a 9-book series, I would create arcs within the series that go across a certain number of books. So I call them like linked trilogies or linked duologies. And so say I had a 9-book series planned, I would have the first arc of the trilogy in that, if it was doing really, really badly, I could wrap it up on that third book. Mm. And, you know, not introduce the next trilogy arc. I would just complete it there. Yeah. And I think, in terms of the opposite way, if it goes really, really well and I've only written a trilogy, and I think I kind of accidentally did this with my first series, and I have my sort of style of ending that I prefer is an open-ended ending. So you resolve all the things that, you know, the major plot points of the series, but you kind of just leave the door ajar at the end of the series. And I did that accidentally, and from now on I do it quite intentionally, in that you can, like, you know, the main character isn't married with kids and 80 years old by the end of the third book, you know. Mm-hmm. there's not much to work with there, but, you know, maybe they get with whoever they're getting with, they resolve the war, or, you know, whatever genre you're writing in, or if it was crime, they obviously solve the case, but then there's a new case, or in fantasy, there's a new big bad. Like, you can, if you leave the door ajar, you can have that flexibility that if that series does go really, really well, you can pick up whatever sort of threads you left loose and continue them into the next linked, whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I would consider going back and doing for the Oromia Chronicles. That was a really successful series, and I don't think I really realised it at the time, but because I have left the door ajar in certain elements of the narrative, I can go go back and pick it up and continue it on if I wanted to.
Mm.
So yeah, it's a lot to think about as an author, I suppose. But yeah, it's just part of this whole thing. Like you've got to have sort of strategies in place. And also as you go through your career, you learn what works for you and you pick up on the things that maybe work better for you than someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, again, like we mentioned at the beginning, but nowadays I think it's hard to tell a serious success from one book. I think you need a couple of books out. So just sort of flagging, like, don't get discouraged if the first book isn't, you know, a number one bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
If you've done all that sort of market research and prep work, you know, it might pick up later on. And I think you've got to give it a proper chance before, you know, using that exit strategy that you might have set up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Okay, we've covered quite a lot of ground, but do you have a final top three tips for writers for writing a series?
Yeah, so I suppose just to preface it by saying, you know, obviously I would assume you're going to have great characters, great story, all of that stuff. Like that's for any book, not just a series. But in terms of setting yourself up for success with a series, I would say use breadcrumbs, open loops, foreshadowing, hooks throughout all the books to guide your readers from one book to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Each book, I think, should have its own complete arc. But at the end of each book in the series, unless it's the final book, you should have, you know, a new question or a continued question that goes throughout the series that the reader really, really wants to know the answer to. And that's how you get the higher read-through rates. It's how you get pre-orders, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's worked really well for me, and I know has worked really well for a lot of authors, is setting your series, and that's plural. So if you've got one series, then you're writing the next series, set them in the same literary universe, mm-hmm. which is what you've done as well.
Yeah.
So readers have that familiarity. It's not so much of a jump for a reader who's just finished this really great series to then have to have like this huge new learning curve with a new series. Like you can say, oh, it's that town you love, or it's that, you know, magical place you love, or it's the brother of so-and-so who you loved in his first book, you know, you can go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really sort of clever way to bring readers from not only one book to the next, but one series to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, just do your market research. I wish I had have done that for my first series. Like I got lucky. It did really well. I was much more intentional about it with my second series. And now I'm writing my third series. It has played a huge role in decisions I'm making from the get-go. And I hope that later down the line, it makes things like advertising and marketing and finding a new readership so much easier, which is what a lot of authors have done. So yeah, those are the three I would start with.
Yeah. And of course the market is always changing, the industry changes. So it's never too late to jump in and do that research, because what may have been the case when you started a series 5 years ago might not be the case anymore. So keeping an eye on what's current, I think, is an important part of that research.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is in line with all things indie publishing. Mm. You've got to keep your finger on the pulse of the developments that are happening, of what people are doing, what's working, what's not working. I think being an author, and particularly being an indie author, is just a constant education. You're never not learning. You're never not striving to learn more. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Like sort of keeping your finger on the pulse while you could be like six books into your series. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be looking at the charts. You shouldn't be reading still in that genre. You know, the work is never done, sadly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so where can our listeners find out more about you and your books and get their hands on this fantastic book about writing a series?
So probably my website is best, which is just helenshoira.com. And if you go to helenshoira.com/forauthors, if you're interested in writing a successful series, I've got a free downloadable bundle, which is how to write a successful series cheat sheet. So sort of like a worksheet that you can go through that sets you up for doing that market research and understanding series. It also has my complete series Bible for my series Curse of the Siren Queen. And that is a meaty 65-page document. And it's just, I thought people might benefit from looking at how someone might set out a series Bible. Mm. So it's sort of like an example. And it also, you also get a complete volume of author diaries. So while I was starting A Layer of Bones, which is the first book in my second series, I kept like a journal of how all that was going. And it's very much like a behind the scenes look at the ups and many downs of writing a series. So I just thought people might be interested in taking a look at that stuff. So probably my website is best, but I'm on all the usual Instagram and Facebook and all of those. But I suppose social media for me is more about my fiction, whereas the nonfiction and advice for authors and things is through my website and my nonfiction mailing list.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lovely. So we're going to finish things off with a little tradition we have here at Unstoppable Authors, which is the would you rather question. Oh, so would you rather, as you are a fantasy author, have magical powers in a world where magic is outlawed, or no magic in a world where magic is commonplace?
Oh, I thought that was going to be harder. I think the first one. I would want to be special. It's funny because like that premise of that question is sort of the premise of the Oromir Chronicles. The magic is outlawed and the main character has magic and she's got to suppress it. But I think I would still prefer that to everybody else having magical powers and me being the odd one out.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, Helen. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always a really nice way to start the day talking to a fellow author. So thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I hope that you got absolutely loads of information from that conversation, and do go and get Helen's book if you haven't already. I've read it and it's a cracking read, full of really, really useful information. I will share a link in the show notes. Please remember that if you want to join us for Sprints and Giggles and get all of the other benefits, you can do so over at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And don't forget to share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.